from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
God's mercy is without limits, so much so that His means are often mysterious. This week on Register Radio, Jeanette DeMello and film producer Daniel Da Silva look at the mystery of the original divine mercy image of St. Faustina. Also, Jeanette and Register writer Brian O'Neill discuss well-known and little-known celebrity conversions. Welcome to Register Radio, a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm the producer of the show, Elena Rodriguez, sitting in for Tom Price. Our editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register, Jeanette DeMello, will be leading the conversations. Thanks for joining us, Jeanette. Our first guest is Daniel Da Silva. He is the director of the film The Original Image of Divine Mercy. It's the mysterious story of the Divine Mercy image, as you have probably never heard it before. Daniel is with us to reveal the mystery and its theological meaning. Jeanette DeMello talks to Daniel.
Daniel, it's great to have you on Register Radio. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Jeanette. Thanks for the invitation.
You know, I just finished the screener that you sent to me of the film that you've produced, and it was excellent. I enjoyed everything from the music to the visuals to most of all the story being told. And obviously this is a story many people have not heard. It's the story, the mysterious story of the original Divine Mercy image. And I just want to start off with, okay, I went to a small area outside of Krakow to a shrine of the Divine Mercy, sat in a chapel and saw an image, and I now know that is not the original image.
And nobody, you were at Legivniki, and nobody in Legivniki would have told you that that wasn't the original image.
Absolutely. I was 19 years old. I went there and had this wonderful interview, wonderful conversation with a little nun, the only one around who spoke English, and I thought I was looking at the original image, but that is just not the case. And so I was just amazed to hear this story. Let's start with, without revealing too much of the film, because I want people to see it for themselves, but reveal some of the mystery behind this image.
Well, some of the mystery is, I have to say this, just the overarching conclusion that I come away with after, you know, traveling for a couple of years doing this film is simply this. This is exactly how the Lord would have wanted it. Or, in fact, it's the exact way he did want it, because this is how it's turned out. That the painting would go missing for all these years, and then around 1989, emerged and returned to Vilnius somewhat non-triumphantly. And only now, during the Holy Year of Mercy, is the story for the first time being told all in the same place, you know, in this film. So I have to say, however it's worked out, no complaints from my end.
Right.
The painting went into hiding immediately, or almost immediately after it was painted, because Vilnius was being occupied. It was occupied by the Soviets. It was occupied by the Germans, and it was very dangerous to live your faith out loud and to wear it on your sleeve, as they say. People had to be very, very secretive. So, I mean, you know, Jesus knew when he appeared to Saint Faustina in Vilnius, Lithuania. He knew what he was doing. He knew he was going to have this painting be done in a country, in a town that was being occupied and was being fought over. He knew exactly what he was doing. And so this must have been part of his plan. I don't know why, but that seems to be what his preference was. And in the meantime, you know, some other artists came out and were doing other renditions of this lost painting. Artists who never even saw the painting. These people never even saw the original image. And their images got more popular. And, you know, the story goes on from there.
Absolutely. It really is a fascinating story. I want everyone to see it. The name of this piece is called, this film is called The Original Image of Divine Mercy, The Unknown Story of an Unknown Masterpiece. And currently, as I understand it, the film is being shown to audiences and churches or groups who request it. Is that correct?
That's right. It's for a nominal fee. Proceeds, by the way, go to the shrine in Vilnius, Lithuania, where the original painting now hangs, and they don't have a pilgrimage center. So what we're trying to do is fund a pilgrimage center there for them. You can't even go there and buy a copy of the painting, for example, like on a holy card. You can't even buy a holy card.
It's just amazing. It's so, just amazing.
Because nobody cares. Nobody's known about this painting. So we're trying to get the word out, about, first of all, about the painting, and maybe inspire some people to go take a look at it, because it is breathtaking. But yeah, that's where the painting is right now. And people that license the film from us, it's a nominal fee. Proceeds go to the planning and the development and the building of a small pilgrimage center. We send it out to parishes or to groups. I mean, we've even sent it to, you know, people that are having their own little dinner parties. And they have the film for 5 days, and they do whatever they want with, you know, with the film. They have to show it in the same venue, but they can show it as many times as they want, say at a school, at a parish. They can show it to the youth ministry. They can show it to the all the different ministries in the school, or open up to the entire parish. And then they send the DVD back to us. We're doing this as a way to sort of encourage parishes and groups to have an event for the Holy Year. And then, you know, obviously when they're done, they send it back. In November, we'll release the DVD so everyone can have it in their homes. But for now, we were in production when the announcement was made, when the Holy Father announced the Holy Year of Mercy. So right there and then we made this plan that, okay, we're going to use this film to promote that parishes have their own events. So that's what we're trying to do.
Absolutely. What a great way to promote mercy. And obviously, we want to let people know where they can find this resource, and that would be at www.divinemercyfilm.com, www.divinemercyfilm.com. And I'm talking right now to the film's producer, Daniel Da Silva. This is on Register Radio. I encourage everyone to go to the website and find out how you might view the film. But let's talk a little bit more about basically why this film was done. You must have a devotion to the Divine Mercy yourself, Daniel. I don't know otherwise how you would have chosen to do such a documentary. So how did this come to be for you personally?
Well, you're right. I do have a devotion to the Divine Mercy. The Divine Mercy had everything in the world to do with my own, as we call it now, a reversion, my own reversion to the faith. Born and raised Catholic, but obviously went and did my own thing for a while. And coming back to the faith, for me, was through the prayers of the Divine Mercy and the promises of Christ. That mercy meant everything to me. It was the welcome mat for me into the Church. So being devoted to the Divine Mercy, I happened to be in Vilnius for completely different reasons. Mm-hmm. When a priest walked up to me and asked me if I wanted to spend the night with Jesus. I had no idea what he meant, and he didn't speak any English except for that sentence. He literally said, you like spend the night with Jesus. And I thought, you know, sure, great. He took me to his car. We started driving over to the shrine. I didn't know where I was going. And I realized in the car, he didn't speak any more English, that he had asked someone how to say that sentence so he could ask me if I wanted to do this. So we got to the shrine, and there he told me that this painting was the original. I thought, like you, I thought, there's no way. The original in Poland, you know, for sure. And he insisted that this was it. And he made a pallet for me there on the ground in the church. At the time, the church was not open 24 hours a day. It is now. Mm-hmm. They have adoration 24 hours a day, and the church is open 24 hours a day. You can go there any time of the day you want. But back then, they closed at night, and they opened for a 6 o'clock mass. So he explained to me in his broken English that he'd be waking me up at 6, and leaving, he's going to lock me in the church. And they'd have a mass at 6, and I had to, you know, pick up my pallet before that. So I spent the night in this church.
That's amazing.
yes, not even knowing where I was. I had no clue where I was. And I couldn't ask him because he didn't have any English skills. I couldn't ask him the questions I had, you know. So it, as God would have it, it made this curiosity burn within me because there was no one to ask. So when I got up in the morning and went to the mass, and then I started asking questions around the town of Vilnius, who knew what about this, you know, this painting, and the story just began to unfold. And I just could not believe that nobody had done a documentary on this before. I mean,
absolutely.
We have a lot of propagators of the Divine Mercy, and I know they know that this is the original. Why hasn't anybody done, you know, told the story? So I decided to, this is 8 years ago, you know, I decided to try to raise the money, and finally it came to fruition. So here we are.
It's just wonderful. I mean, I'm so glad it came to fruition, and in the way that God's mercy has been in a part of telling the story truly is a blessing and a gift for us, as you say, in this year of mercy. We've had two writers at the National Catholic Register who've written about this, and everyone who's read their stories is just delighted, and that their stories have done very well. It's both Joseph Pronishin. He's written on the documentary Sheds Light on Mercy Masterpiece, and we've also had Carrie Grass, who's a blogger at the Register, and she has also written, and this is a blog called Neglect for Decades, Here's St. Faustina's Original Divine Mercy Image. I encourage all of our listeners to go to www.divinemercyfilm.com and take a look and see how you might be able to bring this to your community. Daniel, we're really all out of time, but I am so grateful to have this conversation with you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Jeanette. It's great talking to you. Thank you.
And thank you. That was Daniel Da Silva, director of the film The Original Image of Divine Mercy. And thanks to Jeanette DeMello as well. When we return, why the famous and the infamous came home to the Catholic Church. You'll hear all about celebrities and their hidden stories of conversions when Register Radio continues in a moment on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
In today's world, we have all kinds of misinformation and even disinformation about Christianity, Catholicism, and religion in general. And we need a source that is going to give us direct quotations and authentic news about what is going on in the church, so we know what the Pope really said and not what the media said he said. We need to know what the Synod is doing, what the encyclicals mean, in order to be able to give the facts of our faith. For that reason, we need the National Catholic Register, which will give us the good news along with the hard news of our world today. And in that way, we can have what we need to go out to our world and give them the good news of Jesus Christ.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello, I'm Elena Rodriguez. Our next guest is Register writer Brian O'Neill. He is the author of 3 titles from Servant Books: 39 New Saints You Should Know, Saint Who, 39 Holy Unknowns, and most recently, 150 North American Martyrs You Should Know. Brian sits down with us to share about the well-known and the little-known conversions of celebrities, why the famous and infamous came home to the church. Jeanette?
Brian, it's great to have you on Register Radio. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it's a real blessing, and the pleasure is all mine. Thank you, Jeanette.
Sure. You know, every year around Easter, around this time of year, the Register looks for stories of conversion to share with our readers. This year, you wrote a story, an article that included notable conversions in American history. And your article was based on the book, The Mississippi Flows Into the Tiber by John Beaumont. And before we talk about these notable converts, what does that title mean?
Well, it's kind of a play on... It's a bit of a European reference, because if people will say, they swam the Thames and went over into the Tiber, if we're an Anglican conversion, or a Lutheran conversion in Germany, they swam the Rhine and went over, and they swam over the Tiber, that sort of thing. But it is also a reference to a book about the Second Vatican Council called The Rhine Flows Into the Tiber.
Okay.
And so since the biggest river in the United States is the Mississippi, Mr. Beaumont, who's a British convert, chose that for his title.
Yeah, it actually is a great title. I mean, the Mississippi, many who live around the Mississippi are devout Protestants or evangelicals. So it does make a lot of sense for them to use that title as these people flow into the Roman Catholic Church. So, okay, I hadn't thought of that connection. But who are some of the notables that the book talks about?
Well, there's John Wayne. That was a really bad imitation of him. But, you know, a lot of people know the Media Research Center. His name, L. Brent Bozell. Well, his dad helped found with William F. Buckley the National Review magazine. So
okay.
L. Brent mm-hmm. Bozell Sr. was a was one of those. You had everyone from socialists and or communists to people who were politically the most conservative. You had people who are were fundamentalists and or no religion at all, atheists, Orthodox Jews, secular Jews, and all these different people. I mean, so for instance, if you're like me, you grew up in the 70s and 80s and got home at after school and you flipped on your television and there was Get Smart, one of the funniest programs ever made. Well, Don Adams, star of Get Smart, he was a convert. So was Gary Cooper, Faye Dunaway, Buffalo Bill Cody, Jim Bowie of the Bowie Knife fame, Alamo fame. He was a convert. Henry Ford II, Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people. I can't believe a book could cover so many people. But were there any that really stood out to you that impacted you particularly?
There were a couple. First, what kind of stood out to me is that, you know, I anticipated the apologetics type conversion story as well. I found out that Christ really was truly present in the Eucharist, so I became a Catholic. But what also surprised me were people such as the popular blogger Father John Zuhlsdorf. People like him who came into the church because they were so attracted to beauty. For Father Zuhlsdorf, it was the Gregorian chant he heard popping into a church one Sunday in Minneapolis. For a woman who was an author and journalist back in the latter early part of the last century, she walked in and was just taken by the beauty of the mission at Santa Barbara, California. So there were these things. I think one of my favorite stories has to do with a woman named Louise Brooks, who was the it girl during the 1920s. If you've ever seen the flapper haircut and the flapper mm-hmm. dresses and the flapper hat, she was the one who got that all started. And if she could have gone anywhere in the world in the 1920s and been instantly recognized, but by the late 30s, early 40s, she had fallen very, very low. She was barely getting by with working behind the counter at Macy's, and
wow.
when times were really tough, she would she even sold herself, unfortunately, and so she was just a really desperate case, and she found comfort and solace in the Catholic Church, and she became kept a spiritual diary. I went to confession and I confessed these mortal sins, and she was a daily communicant for a while, and even
wow.
gave talks to women's groups to parishes, such as one in Rochester, New York. Unfortunately, she, as much as she had come to love the church, she also loved the bottle more. And when she was into the bottle, she was also into, shall we say, other sensual activities. And priests would tell her, look, I can't give you absolution. You're going to have to stop doing this. And she decided she loved this one activity more than she did Jesus Christ, and so she left the church and died alone in her Rochester, New York apartment in 1965. But, I mean, she was this towering figure in film for generations, and some people consider her more important than Marlene Dietrich or Greta Garbo. There was one other, though, that in this year of mercy, I think, really, really stood out, and his name was Brother Clayton Fountain. He died in 2004, and at one point he was labeled the most dangerous man in the entire U.S. federal prison system. He murdered four men. One of those was out of prison. And but he said that God worked to purge me of the inner poisons, that is hatred, rage, bias, bitterness, etc. And after his conversion, his prison cell became a monastic cell, and he associated himself with Cistercian Abbey, was actually studying for the priesthood in prison when he died. So, you know, I just think that that's just such an amazing story.
This is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Brian O'Neill, who is a Register correspondent and also an author. We're talking about his article, Why the Famous and Infamous Came Home to the Church, which ran in the Register in our Easter edition. And, you know, Brian, you have written books, many of them, most of them are about saints. And here you are talking about some conversions, and these aren't of saints. The book has some stories of saints, but the two that you just mentioned, these weren't perfect Catholics. Why do you think a book like this actually even tells the story of these imperfect converts?
Well, because the story is, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, they're, unfortunately, having worked in a diocesan chancery, I can tell you that the vast majority of people who convert come into the church any given Easter vigil will stop practicing their faith within a very short period of time. But
mm-hmm.
the journey that they take can resonate with someone and can maybe lead someone else into their own conversion experience. You know, I think of Henry Ford II, who converted simply because it was his wife was Catholic, and it was a precondition of their getting married.
Sure.
You know, people like this. But then you also have Dutch Schultz, the famous mobster. People have grown very, very tired of him in the mob world, and so they had him executed, had him assassinated. And as he lay dying, he didn't ask for his rabbi. He asked for a Catholic priest who anointed him and gave him the introductory sacraments all at once, and then gave him the, extreme unction, the anointing of the stick. And so he died a Catholic. His parents were so distressed by this that they didn't want him being buried in a Catholic cemetery, and yet he requested being buried in a Catholic cemetery. But he was buried with his prayer shawl on. But, you know, you have these great, great stories like this. Can I share a quote with you that I think just really sums up why so many of these people come in?
Absolutely, please.
It's great. It's by a screenwriter named Gene Fowler. He wrote the original Call of the Wild movie screenplay. He had a lot of famous books in the 30s and 40s. And he wrote, "Why did I become a Catholic? To that question, I would ask in return, where else can an old man go? It is a church that for almost 2,000 years has been a refuge of sinners and for the poor. And I have been both sinful and poor during a life of incautious impulses, careless mischief, bad investments in business, and in pleasures. And even today, I have to make frequent visits to the church when the hornet fellow catches me napping. He never sleeps, you know." And I just thought that was a great synopsis of so many of these.
Absolutely, sure. I mean, the fact that the horned fellow is never sleeping is an important thing for us to remember when we read these conversion stories. I'm a cradle Catholic, you know, and every time, every Easter vigil I go to and I see these converts coming into the church, my eyes fill up with tears, and I don't even know their stories, you know.
Right.
But you do know it's going to be a checkered future. I mean, that we are all sinners, and it's few that we actually can say, wow, they lived their practicing of the faith in such a perfect way, becoming saints in the end. But the truth is, as you said, the true story is so many of us do fall. So these conversion stories really do have a power to remind us that the horned fellow is never sleeping, and so therefore we should be alert. You know, Brian, it's also the year of mercy, and you know, this conversion speak of mercy. What role in the book does mercy play?
Tremendous. I'll give you another example. Those of you old enough to remember the first President Bush, his political operative, his genius, was a guy named Lee Atwater, who had made his bones as a no-holds-barred, the end justifies the means kind of operative. And at the end of his life, a Catholic friend of his, had the courage to ask him, "Are you afraid of what's going to happen to you after your death?" And Atwater admitted, yes, I'm petrified of this. And so Atwater got put in, this friend put him in touch with the servant of God, Father John Hardin. And Hardin really just was kind of almost like training a boxer, just did not let up and would not allow him to receive absolution until, you know, he had really made a thorough confession lasting several days at least. And, you know, so we've heard about this thing where Atwater was calling people, including former Democratic presidential nominee Michael Dukakis, and apologizing for him. It was Father Hardin who, is on the road to sainthood himself, who did that. But, you know, he died in the arms of the church. He died of brain cancer, and he died in the arms of the church, Lee Atwater did. And what a tremendous mercy that God would, you know, God is, as C.S. Lewis said, the hound of heaven. He never stops hunting after us. And it's so, so beautiful to realize that no matter whether our sins be as scarlet, he will wash them away in his blood. And we just need to ask for that. We need to say, you know, I give those sins to you. No sin of mine is bigger than you, because you are my creator and you are my God.
Amen. Amen. You know, well, it's what a perfect time to do it in this Easter season. And Brian, I thank you so much for sharing these stories of conversion with us.
Thank you, Jeanette. It's been a real blessing. Thank you so much.
And thank you both, Register writer Brian O'Neill and Jeanette DeMello. You can always read more about celebrity conversions and about the mystery behind the real image of the Divine Mercy by going to ncregister.com. Hey, and do you know of anyone who might want to hear Register Radio? Point them to ncregister.com and click on the radio tab to listen or even to download the show. All Register Radio shows are archived there. On behalf of Jeanette DeMello, Daniel Da Silva, Brian O'Neill, Tom Price, and all of us here at The Register and at EWTN Radio, thank you for joining us. This is Elena Rodriguez, and we will be here again next week for more of Register Radio.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.